Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Different Strokes for Different Folks, to find common ground and take it to the next level with David Clark here on Blog Talk Radio. Each week, the show will encourage you to keep an open mind and prepare to open the door to new understandings. We will have an exciting array of diverse guests who will point up the fact that we are all spiritual beings having a human experience. Now your host, David Clark.
Welcome to Different Strokes for Different Folks, where we will be finding common ground and taking it to the next level. I'm your host, David Clark. I'm a spiritual adventurer, and I suggest you become the same. This show will encourage you to keep an open mind and prepare to open the door to new understandings. It's my hope that you will come to see that despite our seeming differences, we're all basically the same. This is a no-holds-barred show. My guests will have differing spiritual belief systems, and some will have no spiritual beliefs. You may or you may not agree with things that are said. What I'd ask you to do is keep an open mind. This way, you can see where you can find common ground so that you can relate rather than compare yourself to others. Now, today, my guest is Kyle Shiver. Kyle is a Reiki master, sound and energy healer, and a spiritual life coach. He's also an inspirational speaker, and he has shared his messages and facilitated workshops on meditation at Unity churches all over the Southeast. His intention in all his work is to teach and expose people to the idea of self-realization and meditation. Kyle has a website, which is www.thespiritcenter.us, and he blogs regularly and is currently working on a book about his own self-realization. He has just released an audio CD of guided meditations called Vibrations of the Heart, which is available at his website, which again is www.thespiritcenter.us, and at all of his speaking engagements. So now I'd like to welcome Kyle. Kyle, how are you today?
Wonderful. How are you, David? Thanks for having
me on. I'm happy to have you here, and I have a number of questions I've come up with, and you've provided me with some that you want to ground that you want to cover. So let's get right into it. I'd like to start out and ask you what your religious and spiritual background was like as a child.
Well, my mother took me to church 3 times a week until I was 13 years old, and we went to the Church of Christ. And if you're familiar with the Church of Christ, that's what I got when I was growing up, which was, I didn't really go to any other churches, so I think that's, but I hear a lot of people talking about their churches, and the Church of Christ is one of those churches that preaches if you're good while you're alive, you get to go to heaven after you die, and if you're not good while you're alive, you're not going to heaven when you die. So that was my exposure to religion growing up.
Did you feel like you were religiously abused as a result of that particular church?
Well, as a child, there were definitely very early on, there were a lot of questions that I had that I did not feel like were adequately answered. And I went to the church looking for answers. I mean, my mother, you know, we would read the Bible stories at night, and we would get on our knees and pray. But I just, there were a lot of questions that I had that they didn't answer. I wouldn't necessarily say that I was, I don't know that I'd go so far as to call it abuse, but they definitely, I never really went along with what was taught there or what was said there. I felt like they really didn't get it. But at that time, I didn't know who did get it. You know, it's not like I had access to a lot of ideas or to any other churches at the time. So,
now, do you remember what kinds of questions that you were looking for answers?
Oh gosh, the basic ones: why am I here? Why are we here? What really happens to people when they die? You know, where is my my grandfather? You know, my grandfather died when I was 8, and the preacher said, "Well, you know your grandfather was a good man, and he's in heaven." And I said, "Where is that? Is that, you know, does that mean we have to ride on an airplane, or, you know, is that like a really long way away?" Or, and they were explaining to me, he's just nowhere. And so I was a real questioner, and I, as a kid, I was really perplexed and unhappy with the answers that I got at the church. It just didn't make a whole lot of sense to me.
Well, what was your original concept of God?
I gotta say the truth. I did not have my own. I really didn't have my own concept of God. I was given this concept of God, and the concept of God that I was given, of course, is that God is somewhere else. We're not really sure where, but he's in heaven, and we don't really know where that is, but that's where God is, and we ask God, you know, for everything, and we, but I really had no concept. I did feel like the church that we were going to, I did feel like they had absolutely no idea what was going on or what they were talking about.
Okay.
I didn't have any answers. I knew the church didn't have any answers either, but I didn't know who did.
Well, when did you develop the concept of God, and how did that happen?
It started in my later teen years, and it started through it probably was a rough period in my life, and I found myself in a mental hospital when I was 17. I had a lot of issues going on in my life. By the time I was 17, I was a chronic drug addict. I was a chronic alcoholic. I was unable to go to school. I was unable to work. I was unable to function. I was unable to go through drug rehab. They took me out of drug rehab and put me into a mental facility. And because I couldn't function, in the rehabilitation program. And that was when I started developing a concept of God, was when I was in the hospital. And I got a lot of help there, you know, and I got a lot of people that had some of the answers that I was looking for there, or at least some different ideas than the ones I had seen all my life. And that was the beginning of it.
Well, what was the concept, and how has that evolved over the years?
Well, sitting in group therapy one morning, I was telling the counselor that was in there, I was explaining to her that my brain would start going, and I couldn't stop it. And I said, you know, my mind is driving me crazy. I can't stop it. Sometimes I completely lose control of myself, and I can't stop myself, and it's like I'm watching myself. My brain is just torturing me. And she said, how do you know? And I said, what do you mean? What do you mean? How do I know I'm being tortured by this brain? And she said, how do you know?
Yeah.
Who is it that is being tortured by this brain? And I said, what do you mean? What are you talking about? And this counselor guided me through this process of rebirth, really, coming into the consciousness and coming into the awareness that I was not the thoughts that I had. And that was my initial self-realization, was sitting and watching the thoughts go through my brain and realizing that I was separate from them. That was a major self-realization, to realize this third entity. You know, there's the mind and there's the body and then there's what? The spirit. And I had just never been consciously aware of myself.
Well, how did you manage to find sobriety for yourself?
Just the initial understanding that I could sit back and watch changed everything for me. I mean, I was somebody who literally, I went to my parents' living room and I said, I cried and I said, you have to help me. I'm going crazy and I'm trying to kill myself. I can't stop drinking. I can't stop getting high. You got to help me. So they get up and they take me to the hospital. And then when we get to the hospital, I sit there for a few minutes and I think, well, you know, I think I might have overreacted. And so the next thing you know, they got me locked down so I can't get out of where I just begged to get into. And it wasn't until this interaction with this counselor that I was able to just be quiet and watch what was going on. And just seeing that, when I left the mental health hospital, they suggest, you know, they wanted me to go back into rehab, and I had decided that I would do what they said for me to do. And you know what, I went through rehab, I went home, I went back to school, I finished, I was working a job. Everything that I could not do
good
before
for you.
I could now do. Okay, it's like night and day before I went in the hospital, when I came out of the hospital. And I've really come to understand that consciousness, that awareness of the self as the witness or the observer. I really believe that what Jesus talks about in the Bible when he talks about being born again, being reborn. I really think that's what it's about. And I've read up on you, and I know you can relate to you're picking up what I'm putting down here.
Oh, yes, absolutely. No problem. Yeah. Well, let me ask you this question, and it may be redundant, I don't know, but have you ever had a faith crisis? Was that something that happened before you went into the mental institution as far as faith in God? Certainly faith in self, there was crisis going on there.
In the years since I left the hospital, it's been a long time. I'm 45 now. I was 17 then. In the years since then, there have definitely been lots of difficult times to where I didn't understand what was happening or why things were happening, or it's not like my whole understanding of the universe came to me all at once, but it was a process that I had to go through there was a process of learning how to do this thing, learning how to meditate, learning how to quiet the mind, learning how to be present more and more often, learning how the world works, and observing and finding my own understandings of things. I think we all have faith crisis, and it every time I have had a faith crisis, it's just about, you know, these universal laws that we have. They're just the universal laws. If something's not working, it's my fault, you know. And there have been times, no doubt, when I have, you know, pointed at you,
David. Yeah, right, right.
This is not my fault.
I know that game.
So that would be, you know, that's what happens. I really just work with universal laws. And so if there's something that's not manifesting in my life, or if there's something that's not going on in my life, then I have to go within and I have to figure out what it is that I'm doing to cause or to not cause what's going on.
Mm-hmm. Well, what would you say to somebody that's going through a faith crisis that would be hopefully illuminating and come from a place of support?
You know, it's okay to go through a faith crisis. This is what we're supposed to do. We're vibration. We go in and we go out. Everything in my life, looking back over my life, is a cycle. And, you know, it's supposed to happen. You're supposed to go through whatever it is that you're going through. This is how, this is how we grow. You know, you push it, you pull it. It comes in and it goes out. There's times when everything is going your way, and no matter what you do, you can't stop it. And then there's times when everything is going against you, and no matter what you do, you can't stop it. And so the thing that I say to people is that the power is you. You know, the power is within. You are the power. You are the awareness. You are it, and it's all about going within and searching within and finding what I need to do more in accordance with these laws of the universe that we have.
Well, you've hit on some really key points. I was just going to say personal responsibility is one thing that you were talking about, which I think is so important. And the very reassuring thing that you said is that whatever is going on in a person's life is meant to happen. So that a person going through whatever they're experiencing is experiencing just what their spirit needs in order to develop. And I think that that's a very reassuring thing, that everything happens for a reason, that there are no mistakes, and that every mistake is correctable if an individual just takes the time to figure out where they've erred and then make a turn in the other direction. So thank you for that. Well, let's get into some of the questions that you proposed I ask you. Why did you decide to become a life coach?
I decided to become a life coach because it is something that organically happens. I think in going through all of the experiences that I've gone through in my life, people just naturally began to gravitate to me. And, I mean, I'm that guy that you know, somebody walks up to and just starts dumping their whole life story on the floor. And So I just
never experienced that.
I just found it natural.
Sorry, couldn't help but put that in there.
I just found it naturally happening. And I, uh-huh. I decided to just go with the flow. I was really interested in studying energy healing and Reiki, and I was really interested in. I've always really loved Paramahansa Yogananda, the autobiography of a yogi, and everything that he wrote.
I love that book.
So I started going to the Yogananda Institute online, and you know how you just kind of push that first domino and the rest of them all fall. And the next
right.
thing I knew, I had a little office space, and I'm doing Reiki and I'm doing life coaching and I spiritual counseling, and it just organically happened.
Can you explain what life coaching is about? You talk about yourself being a spiritual life coach, so I'm making the assumption that that's where the counseling comes in. But what is involved in being a life coach? What could somebody hope to gain from coming to you for that kind of support?
Our minds are very cluttered. Our minds are running at a speed that is almost unimaginable. And we don't know how easy it is to slip over into a false world. So life coaching is a lot of slowing things down and making sense of things, putting things in order of priority. Priority is a really big thing. You've got to, sometimes people don't know what their priorities are. People have things all out of order, and they don't really know which way they're going. And I mean, you know, they've got 3 jobs and 2 kids, and this is over here and that's over there, and they're just, you know, they're confused. And so it's just really bringing the complicated down into a really simple form to where a person can say, okay, this is what matters, and all that other stuff doesn't matter. And then being there to support. Because all that stuff that doesn't matter, you know, it still calls. It still calls them, and they, you know, they have doubts, and they have, you know, they have tough days. And so, but initially it's developing the idea of what is important, what are my priorities, getting rid of all the things that don't really matter. And once that happens, people move really fast. It's amazing.
Now, do you coach? I'm sorry.
It's just amazing how once that happens, people move really fast. I mean, I've seen people go from one end of the world to the other end of the world during a session and just stand up and say, oh, my God, I don't need to see you anymore. I got it. You know,
That's great.
It's amazing when you just sit down with somebody and just really simply lay everything out on the table. And they can see it. A lot of times I just repeat back to people what they just said to me. You know, because we don't hear ourselves.
Well, do you... Right, right. I can relate to that. I'm just wondering, do you always do your work in person, or are there other means by which you can do the life coaching?
I use Skype a great deal. I do I do telephone conversations. I do Skype, and I also have an office space here in Savannah where I see clients.
Okay.
And I've tested it out.
Getting back to...
Okay.
Go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to throw in there.
I'm sorry to interrupt.
No, that's fine. I tested it out, and Skype, I actually have better results with people who I Skype with than I do at the office.
Really? What do you think that's about?
I have no idea.
That amazes me.
I have
wow.
no idea. But
wow.
If I had trouble, I would want to Skype with me. Because whatever happens, it really is amazing. So.
Wow. Well, I asked you why you decided to become a life coach. Can you tell me what was involved in preparing for that?
Well, besides it just sort of morphing organically in my life, I've been, the last time I had a quote-unquote regular day job was 1997. So I'm somebody who I got my calling, and my calling was to play music, and I became a musician, and I totally abandoned everything else in life, and I've been a musician all this time. And so I think my having my initial self-realization and then a few years later receiving my calling and my getting these questions answered, you know, why am I here? Why am I here on earth? What am I supposed to do? What am I, you know, what is my role here? I think a lot of that was why it morphed into me being a life coach and working with other people. And I studied, like I said, I go to the Yogananda Institute online, and I'm certified to teach their program, which is called Ancient Keys to Achieving Success and Happiness. In short, they call it Akash. And those are all that program is pretty much what I use in my life coaching.
Well, I wondered how you, if you used any particular vehicle to bring yourself to a point of illumination as to your life's calling, or if that was just something that naturally evolved for you.
Well, after I got out of the hospital, I did stay clean and sober, and I did do work, but I had a lot of trouble with relationships. I was very codependent, and I had a lot of trouble. Even though I was able to watch my mind some, I still had a lot of trouble with my mind. And I kept going into relationships, and they weren't working out. And I was, I really needed them to work out. They were kind of like, I was very obsessive with relationships. And so when I would get into a relationship, and when it wouldn't work out, I would just be devastated. And quite frankly, I went through that. I went through that for about 8 years before one night I was in my room, and I was playing my guitar, and I set it down in the corner and went back over and sat down on the bed, and I looked across the room, and my guitar was looking at me. and I got it just like that, just that fast. I was already a musician.
Very cool.
I'd been playing music all my life. I knew that I was always a musician, but I didn't know that music was me. I didn't get that. I didn't
like
put that together. I never put that together until that moment. Mm. And at that moment, it was like the universe snapped its finger and everything just went, whoosh, and I was in a different world. And I never needed I never needed anything outside of myself to make me okay again after that. I've never had another crazy bad relationship. I don't need things outside of me to make me okay anymore, because I realized music is me. This, it just happens. It flows. It's always been. It's obviously what I'm already doing it. But when you realize, wow, this is my calling in life. Because I would come home from work and sit in my room and play guitar and wonder what I was supposed to do with my life.
I was just going to say, I think you've hit on something really important, and that is the notion that there's nothing that any of us need outside of ourselves to fill up that vacuum that only spirit can fill. And spirit calls to us in different ways because we all have our own individual gifts. We're all unique expressions of God as I see it. And for you, it sounds like music was a big part of that. So putting two and two together, spirit draws you to music, which seems to fulfill a part of your life purpose. And I really like that because I see so many different ways that people attach themselves to things, be it people, places, things, various addictions, and none of that works. So thank you for giving us that. And I'm sorry again for interrupting you.
Oh, you're fine. You're welcome. I read a lot of Osho. Are you familiar with Osho at all?
No, I'm not. No. What is it?
He was an Indian mystic, lived over in India, and I read a lot of his books. I listen to a lot of his talks, and he says, wisdom is gained through active living.
How do you spell his name?
Osho.
Okay.
And that's how I learned everything, is putting my helmet on and getting out on the field and playing.
Right.
So that's a lot of what life coaching is. This is what you really want to do. And let's get suited up and get out there, and quit messing around. So
wonderful. Well, why did you decide to record a CD of guided meditations?
People were just everywhere I went. People were asking for them. I started doing a monthly meditation here in Savannah at the Unity Church that we go to here, and I would do the guided meditations, and then I wound up going to different unities to play music. And when I would be scheduling these things, I would say, well, if I'm going to be there to do a concert and play music, is there any way I can do a meditation seminar? And they would say, sure, yeah, why not? And so I wound up going around all these places and doing all these seminars and talks and teaching meditation, talking about meditation and leading guided meditation. And so that really, oddly enough, became more important to me than the music that I was playing and playing the music. Hmm. So people were asking wherever I was at, do you have a guided meditation CD? What do you have? And so it was easy enough to come up with one. I decided to do it. And so now whenever I go, because I'm doing more of that than I am playing music now, more and more doing seminars and talking and teaching meditation, that kind of thing. So.
Hmm. Well,
and
tell us about the CD.
All right.
Yeah, and how many meditations are on it? And then get back to the thought, if you can remember it, that you were going to share.
Oh, no, there's four meditations on here. Two of the meditations are five-minute meditations. Then there is a 10-minute meditation, and then there is a 40-minute meditation. So the
wow.
5-minute meditations are, the first one is about faith and purpose. It's about having a sense of belonging, and like what we were talking about earlier, it's about knowing that there is a reason for everything in the universe, and that means there's a reason for you, there's a reason for everything, that includes you. The second meditation is a 5-minute meditation on gratitude. The third one is on forgiveness, and that's a 10-minute one, and it talks a lot about how we're all vibrations. We're all spirits. We're all growing. We're all along the path. And the fourth one is the vibrations of the heart meditation, which is 40 minutes. It's a fairly lengthy one, and it is a guided meditation to where I have people actually go to the heart and feel the heartbeat, and I talk about every time the heart moves, it creates a vibration, and this vibration goes all through the body. And so that's a guided meditation that I do that people like a lot.
Cool. Well, this raises a couple of questions for me. Number one, where can people buy your CD?
The website, thespiritcenter.us.
Okay. And for people that are unfamiliar with the concept of vibration, would you please explain what that means?
Vibration is everything in the universe. Everything in our universe is made up of vibration, and that means everything in the universe is moving, and when the heart pulses, or when there's any kind of movement, the movement, which is a vibration, creates more vibrations. And this is where I really go into sound and sound healing, because everything is a sound. You know, all vibration has a sound. And so a lot of people, there are times when people think talking about vibrations is just, you know, way out there or too far out there. And I try to explain it in ways that people can comprehend. I mean, we have to deal with life as we know it. You know, you have a coffee cup, and you have a, you know, a CD, and you have your things, and you have your body, and so we have to deal with this, what we have. But it's also really good to know how this functions, and it's good to know that this vibration, all these vibrations that go through us, I mean, when we're aware of them, we become aware of what we really are, you know, of the spirit that we really are. People ask me, what is a spirit? And I say, nothing. You know, there's no part of my body that's labeled Kyle. So you can take all the parts of my body and lay them out on a table, and there's no part there that anybody is going to label Kyle. And what I am is I'm a vibration. It's just all vibration. I don't know if that really answers your question, David, but I tried.
Well, it's very helpful to me. I'll never forget the first time, well, I've been in therapy off and on for years, but I had this one therapist that was a student of Abraham, Esther Hicks.
Okay.
And she talked about how we live in a vibrational universe and that everything is vibration. And that was an alien concept to me, and that's why I wanted you to explain that to other people who may not have been able to grasp that. And I think that you did a very good job with that. Let's get into your talking about your sound and energy healing and what that's about, what's involved with that. It sounds like the vibration is a big part of that.
You know, the most basic way to talk to people about vibrations is when you're walking through the mall and there's this guy walking the other way and he's angry. You know, people give off vibration. People give off vibration. And if you just sit there and watch, you can just see. You know when you're encountering an angry, aggressive person. You know when you're encountering somebody that has a lot of sadness. You know when you're encountering these different things. And that's the most basic way to describe vibrations. People just have their vibrations.
But, they sure do.
But when you study it, you know, I mean, there's calm people, right? I mean, there's people who are really calming. I mean, I have friends who are really peaceful and calm, and I like to just hang out with them because just hanging out with them, I get peaceful and calm. You know, I can get in their energy. So, you know, layman's terms, real easy way to understand energy is just that. I mean, there's people that you get around, and you feel good. You know, they're vibrating these nice, happy feelings, But we each give off our own vibrations, and when you study it, when you start studying it deeper, there's the seven major chakras that we have, and I do chakra balancing and chakra clearing, and the sound is the singing, you know, they have the singing bowls and I use singing bowls.
Oh, I love those.
Oh, yeah, and they're tuned. A lot of those are tuned to particular sound frequencies, and those sound frequencies are in correlation with your chakras. For instance, your third eye chakra is the note A, is what we would know as an A note. So that's how those sounds are used. If I feel like your heart chakra is closed, then I'm gonna start working with sound frequencies that are around F to F sharp. And when we were talking about getting a little bit out there, I'll just tell you that your heart is a vibration. And it makes a sound because it's a vibration. It can't not make a sound. But it's not in a frequency that we can hear with our ears. Okay? But that doesn't mean that we don't know the frequencies there. I mean, dogs can hear frequencies that humans can't hear. Animals can hear frequencies that we don't hear. There are frequencies underwater that the animals use, and we can't hear them, but we know that the frequencies are there. And just that same way, I know that your heart vibrates at a particular frequency, which is around F and F sharp. In our world.
I didn't know that.
So if I'm working with you and I want to work on your heart, I'm going to be using sound tones that are in those frequencies, and that has an effect on your heart. It's like tension. I know what you pay attention to knows it. If you put your attention on something, whatever it is, it knows it.
Sure does.
I mean, I mean, the scientists have, a picnic table. You take a 2x4 off a picnic table top, and that 2x4 is always there. But when you look at it and you put your attention on it, it changes the molecular structure of the inanimate object, whatever it may be. So these sound frequencies are a way that we can place attention on say to your heart. If I was working with you and I was playing that sound tone, it would put attention to your heart. It changes the molecular structure. It's like a magnetic pull kind of thing. And so I use that. I use crystals, and I use sounds, and I use different things. And what I can do is I can scan you and examine you, and I can find out information about the energy centers in your body. And that information tells me what kind of issues you have. So I can scan you, and I can see that your heart chakra is blocked. So that tells me all kinds of things about you that you don't have to tell me. I already know. So that's how I zero in on how to treat people and how to work with people.
Is that something you can do via Skype?
Absolutely.
Okay. All right. Well, let me ask you, what is meditation exactly?
My favorite definition of meditation is alert, focused concentration on a chosen subject.
Okay.
And meditation, for me, in its simplest form, is just being present in the here and now. So I tell people all the time, that race car drivers meditate. People who rock climb meditate. Whenever you're swimming underwater, you're meditating. It's when you're present in the moment. Mindfulness, Thich Nhat Hanh calls it mindfulness. And that's my simplest explanation for what meditation is learning how to be mindful more and more often.
What are some of the ways that people can meditate, aside from getting your CD as one prime example?
The reason that I do guided meditations is because for beginners, it's a lot easier for them to follow a guided meditation than it is for them to do some of the it's a lot easier. And also, as somebody who's been meditating for years, I don't do the same meditation all the time. I like to do a guided meditation. I don't do the same thing every day all the time. So the guided meditations are perfect for people. Meditation in general, it doesn't really matter if you want to do transcendental meditation or any. There's a lot of different kinds of meditation techniques out there. Everybody's got a new meditation technique for sale. Whatever it is, they're going to want you to hold your focus on something. So you're going to be repeating a mantra over and over again. You're going to be holding your focus on your third eye. You're going to be holding your focus on one of your chakras. You're going to be holding your focus on a candle flame. Whatever. Vipassana meditation is probably what I do the most, which is breath. And yes. it's practicing holding your attention, holding your focus on something. No matter what meditation technique you're gonna get involved with, that's what they're gonna ask you to do. Is to do that. So breathing is
that
my
seems to work best for me. Yeah.
Breathing?
Yes, breathing seems to be very important for me, and a very easy way for me to focus on something simple, so that I let go of my thoughts. And if I have thoughts,
I'm careful not to judge them. I just let them bubble up through my brain and let them go. And in time, the thoughts just empty from my brain, and I'm just focused on the breathing. And, I mean, there are other techniques I use, too, but I like that you mentioned that because I think that's a very simple way for people to meditate.
Oh, yeah. It's in the beginning, what I did was I would sit down, and I had my instructor told me that I should be able to sit down and breathe in and out of my nose, and I should be able to do it 25 times, and I should watch the breath and keep my attention. And of course, in the beginning, I got to about 3, and then I was off and running until I realized, wait, I'm supposed to be counting my breath. But that's where the word practice comes in. You know, that's where the discipline comes in. That's where I really wanted my mind to be quiet. I really wanted to take charge of my mind. I was really, really sick of being tortured by my mind. And when you get to that point, you will take the time to sit down. And when you do, you'll find that you can actually take charge of your mind. You can direct, you know, you can think about what you want to think about, when you want to think about it, for as long as you want to think about it. And when you're done thinking about it, you can stop. And it's amazing.
Well, you've kind of answered the next question I was going to ask you, at least partway. And that is, why is mind control and meditation so important?
Mind control, my wife has asked me not to use that phrase anymore. She says that there's a lot of negative connotations to it, so I'm using take charge of your thoughts now is what I'm going to use.
Okay.
It's really important to take charge. It's really important to take charge of your of the brain. The brain is this it's an organ. It's blood and muscle. It's a thing. It's not you. It's a tool for you to use. Okay? We all have the brain the mind and the body. It's like our car. You know, we can drive it where we want to drive it. It's so important for a person to take charge of the mind. Because the mind is so absolutely phenomenal. And as I was talking earlier when we were talking about life coaching, and I was saying that people come to me and their minds are really cluttered. Everything is really confused. Things are going too fast. And they're over here, and then they're over there, and then they're over here, and over there, and back again. And these people, you know, their lives are cluttered, and their outer lives look just like their inner lives do.
It's amazing how that works.
Okay, so when we take charge of the mind, we clean it up. You know, we're not looking out of a dirty window anymore. It's clean, it's clear, and we have some precision. We know what our priorities are. We know where we want to go. We know what we want to create. We know what we want to do, and then we can move forward when we clear our mind and when we take charge of our minds. And gosh, I mean, I have it all the time where I'll be talking to somebody and I will just. You know, I will just raise my head up and say, you know, what is your intention? Do you want to do this or not? You told me you wanted to do this. Do you want to do this or not? Is this what you want or not? And, of course, they always say yes. And I say, okay, let's own that. Let's own that. Let's get behind that. And so the way to answer all questions is just to ask yourself, is this in line with my intended goal or with my intention?
Okay.
And so it's you know, it's imperative to take charge of your mind. We need you.
Well, I think that that really sums it up. We do need people, and I think that unless somebody is present, they're not in touch with who they are, and it's so easy to become unfocused, and so I like that very much. Let me just ask you in closing what your current spiritual practices are and what has drawn you to Unity Church.
Unity has just opened up for me in such a beautiful way, and I actually went there I was seeking a spiritual community. I have a wife, I have a 6-year-old daughter, and I always had a desire to be a part of a spiritual community, and I would look on the internet and I would find all these churches, and you know, every time I looked at one, I would start reading what they were about, and that would be the end of it. And a friend of mine I was talking one day to a friend, and he said, you should check out unity.org. And so I did, and I thought, wow, there's no reason here why I can't go. So we went, and so it wasn't very long before they found out that I was a musician, or that I am a musician. And it just sort of kind of blossomed from there, where I began traveling around. So I go to Unity. I'm a member of Unity, and I take I'm studying Unity classes. I study at the Yogananda Institute online. I like the Centers for Spiritual Living, the Ernest Holmes. Science of Mind. No particular, you know, I'm not one of these people that says, you know, I have this and that's it. I kind of read a lot of different things. I read a lot of Buddhism. I do read at times. I read a lot of the Bible now. I just read it all. I study it all. I study it all. You probably won't ever find me in a place where they're telling you that hell and heaven are places that you go after you die, if you're good or bad, kind of like Santa Claus. Anything other than that, I'm good.
I like that. Well, Kyle, it's been wonderful having you on the show. You've been a very illuminating guest. I thank you for sharing freely of your experience, and including your personal trials. And I'd love to have you come back again sometime in the future.
Absolutely, David. I appreciate you having me. This is my first radio show that I have ever done that wasn't concerning me playing.
Well, you
music.
Did a great job.
So I'll always remember.
Well, next time, let's do some music the next time. All I need is an MP3.
You got it.
Okay. Well, now we're going to close. Now we can pause and reflect upon the idea that we are all united through the diverse tapestry of our individual gifts. There is no real thing of separation except in our own minds. We are each unique expressions of the ultimate source of our beings. We are spiritual beings having a human experience who are having a spiritual experience. Have a great week, and remember, whatever you dream, you can realize.
You have been listening to Different Strokes for Different Folks. To find common ground and take it to the next level, here on Blog Talk Radio with David Clark, every Friday at 7:30 p.m. Eastern. You can listen to this broadcast again on srbroadcasting.com.